Welcome to Destroy All Culture, the only podcast that leverages an entire artificial intelligence just to read their introduction. Help me, they raided the future and stuck me here just to read this. God damn it. This is not funny. Don't go to music. No, stop you bastards.
And we're back with episode 322 of Destroy All Culture. I'm Adam P. Nave, and with me, as always, is Aiden Morgan.
Adam.
Aiden.
Do you have any idea of how we're going to get down the corridor?
I do not.
MTV. MTV.
Okay. So, here's my question for you.
Okay.
Can you think of another movie that came out in the early 90s, and you know, that feels like it's kind of pushing for it, but another movie that had not only a Tori Amos song, but also had a techno remix of a Tori Amos song, and a Talking Head song that was turned into a music video that was actually sung and performed by the actors in the movie?
I can't think of any other movie except for the one that we're talking about today on the podcast.
Of course. Toys.
Barry Levinson's 1992 feature with Robin Williams, Joan Cusack, Michael Gambon, LL Cool J. I don't know who else. Other people. Oh, Jamie Foxx.
Robin Wright.
Robin Wright.
Robin Wright. And yes, Jamie Foxx's first role on film.
Right.
Like his first job, and Debbie Mazar. Fresh from Empire Records.
Woohoo. He's like, at last, I've hit the big time, she says. Yes. The tagline, laughter is a state of mind.
Yeah, this film... Like, okay, all right, let's just be out with here. I love this film.
Okay.
Many, many people do not.
I am one of many, many people.
Yes.
In that I did not love this film when I saw it in theaters in 1992. And I did not love this film when I saw it again for this podcast. Because I thought, it's been 30 years. Maybe there are things that I did not remember about this film that I would enjoy more, etc. And actually, there are things about it that I genuinely do enjoy. And I'm more than happy to talk about things I enjoy. Although I think they're the things that people typically enjoy when they talk about this film. But they are, I think, things like the production design and the sets and the visual language are just unqualified successes. So, yeah. So that stuff's good.
I understand a lot of why people don't like it. And we're going to get into all of this, obviously. But yeah, I'm just a huge fan of it. I can't be helping that.
That's okay.
It's one of the movies that has never been, that I know of, on Blu-ray. And if ever there was a movie visually which needed that.
I actually thought that when I was watching it, I thought this could use not just a Blu-ray, this could use like a proper 4K remaster. Yeah. This need, like, those, the colors in the movie really deserve like a proper showing and a proper mastering. Yeah.
Weirdly, and not really weirdly, but just for point of fact, all four Toy Story movies on Blu-ray, but also The Toy.
Oh.
You know the movie.
is that the one where they make, where they enslave Richard Pryor for fun?
Yes, it is.
Oh, Jesus Christ. That was a choice, that movie.
But weirdly, Toys, not on Blu-ray.
Not on Blu-ray. And, you know, maybe the secret to getting a movie on Blu-ray is to enslave Richard Pryor for 90 minutes.
Okay.
But I don't think so.
Anyway. Yikes.
Yes, yes, and you know, and that movie, I have to say, I've seen The Toy. It is worse than Toys by a long shot. Yeah.
So just to sum up the film as best you can, because this is kind of a fever dream of a film.
Oh yeah. Okay. So you would like me to do that?
If you like, I could do it if you want.
I'll do it. As the movie starts, the head of a toy factory, what's his name? Kenneth Zevo. His last wish is that his brother Leland Zevo, played by Michael Gambon, who's recently passed on, takes over the running of the business. But Leland is a general who doesn't know how to run a toy factory and decides to turn it into like a military nightmare of a place, making drone. Basically, his big plan is to like create drone warfare, you know, a little bit ahead of its time, using kids. Meanwhile, the son, Leslie Zevo, played by Robin Williams, tries to put a stop to his uncle's evil plans. You know what? I realize this is just like Hamlet. This is basically
the plot of Hamlet. Yeah. A weird plot of Hamlet. And you also keep in mind that, like, you know, that Kenneth Zevo's whole point was that if I put my brother in charge, it will force my son to grow up and be able to take charge.
Right. Yes. He also hired Robin Wright.
Gwen,
thank you for Gwen Tyler, in the duplication room, to meet and
I think he hired her because she was fine for the job, but also he thought, you know, hey, this could happen. I don't want to make sinister out of it.
Yeah, it feels a little bit sinister, but yeah, because even the sister of Joan Cusack's character seems to know what's going on when he sees the two talking in the lunchroom. But anyway, we're getting way ahead of ourselves.
Yeah.
Eventually there's a big confrontation between the good guys and the bad guys. The good guys win. The bad guys are punished a bit, and all is well.
Yeah.
So that's the plot of Toys in a nutshell. It's like Hamlet, but people don't die in the end.
Right. It's very Hamlet coded.
It is Hamlet coded. That's a good way of putting it.
And again, like so many people don't like this movie. It is a weird mash of things and very kind of fever dreamy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people just don't like it because they get lost. And I'm not saying you, mind you, but people don't like because they just kind of get lost in like the visuals and the what's happening of it all. But I do think there were actually really interesting things being said underneath it.
Okay.
But we'll get there. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Visually, I think this is a stunning film.
Yeah. Did you see it in the theater when it came out?
No.
Ah.
I saw it when it hit cable, sadly. I did not get to see it in the theater.
I saw it in the theater for two reasons. One, I like Barry Levinson. I like his movies. And Diner is sort of a low-key favorite of mine. And also I actually really thought the teaser did good work. And that's pretty iconic. That's Robin Williams, the hat against the Windows screensaver background, essentially. But cracking jokes. Tells you really nothing about the movie, but it does tell you that Robin Williams is going to be wearing a funny hat and cracking jokes, and it's going to be interesting.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, I'm in. So I went. So I plunked down some money, and I went and saw Toys.
That's fair. Yeah. I just didn't, and I don't know why. But yeah, no. This was Levinson wanted this to be his first film, and it took like 10 years to actually get done.
Yeah, that's.
No one trusted him to do it, which I understand.
And I think there are parts of this film that Levinson that were not within Levinson's wheelhouse, and it showed.
Yeah.
Some of it was, but some of it definitely wasn't.
But again, production design, as we said, like color use, the sets are just epic. Like this is what Willy Wonka wanted to be.
Yeah. No, I love some of the, like, when you're just using the primary colors, and some of the ways in which not just the ways in which the sets resemble toys, but the way that there's motion and sort of expenditure of effort for no reason but for the silliness of it.
Yeah, no, the hilly hallway is one of my favorite things.
Yep, the hilly hallway with the duck crossing, which turns out to be
just
toy ducks.
Randomly, like at some point, yeah. Some employee just stands there and lets the mechanical ducks cross, and then he goes and does something else.
Yeah, just you know.
And if no one uses that hallway for that 2 hours, then no one does.
Right, but that guy gets a job, so it's communism in action. Just a job for everyone.
Well, again, I would assume he does other stuff.
I hope he doesn't. I hope that guy does nothing but stand there all day.
He doesn't, because we've seen a bunch of the hallway. Like, he's only in the hallway once. So it has to be just, there are certain times.
Right.
Where that's his job.
That's true. I mean, but it could be he was on a break, right? I mean, I'm sure.
Every other time?
It's sketchy. He gets lots of breaks. I mean, I imagine the workers were unionized, so.
And he has to wind the ducks. But yeah, no, the commitment to absurdity of this film is just so gleefully done.
Kind of adorable. I think so, yes.
Yeah, I just, again, like, it was the first thing. The you mentioned the opening scene, and I wasn't sure which, because when I've heard the opening scene reference in this movie, people usually mean one of three scenes. As weird as that sounds.
I think we may be pinpointing a problem with this movie by that very.
Well, no. Because, like, first of all, it's like, do you consider, like, when you say opening scene, do you consider, like, the kids dancing to be the opening scene? Do you consider everything through the death to be the opening scene? And then usually it's the whole funeral bit with the procession.
Right.
That people can really kick off the movie, which, I do agree that, like, that was a problem, but you needed the previous bit. But also, the movie doesn't start until that next scene.
This is true. Now, I meant the opening scene. I meant the kids, the musical number.
Yeah.
And for various reasons, one, the very opening shots with the ballerinas dancing through the model Manhattan streets is one of, like, the most interesting visuals I think I've seen in forever.
Yeah.
I loved that, like, watching that happen. And the other thing was, I was watching, I'm like, is there a different cut of this movie? Because I don't remember this at all. And I don't remember that whole number, because it's so, like, obviously my brain just, like, when I think back to my little mental model of Barry Levinson's toys, that thing is such an outlier that it simply gets yeeted, although it does have a payoff at the end. So,
well, I don't know. Like, you say outlier, I say thematic summation of the film.
Ooh, okay.
Because it comes in like, you know, here's the city and it's almost about to be destroyed by monsters.
Okay, so the ballerinas are sort of like, there's something. I see. Okay.
Right, and then you quickly realize, like, oh, it's just these ballerinas, and then you quickly realize it's kids. And it's that whole thing of, like, you know, play can be dangerous, that there is that kind of possible monster lurking, and it's all about the how do you treat the toys, you know, how you see something, how you perceive it, how you act on it helps build how it acts on the world. And that's all wrapped up in that first little ballerina bit through the very delicate oversized city.
Okay.
I don't know. I've just, like, I mean, I didn't catch that really on the first watch because I couldn't have.
Right.
But, like, when we, and it's first, obviously, when we have another version of that dance kind of, but from a distance at the end, it all clicked to me the first time I saw it. Like, the, oh, that's, you know, that's what this dance is. And then whenever I've gone back and watched the film, it's very much the kind of, here's what we're playing with.
Okay. Yeah, I like that. I like that read.
I don't know if it was intentional, because God only knows what in this movie was actually intentional.
No, it's true. Like when in the first moment, when I think back to the first moments when you start seeing the feet, yeah, you think of a monster movie, right? You think Godzilla, like, etc. Or Gargantua or whatever all those movies. And then you realize it's a dance and it's a Christmas scene.
But that's the other thing. It's like first when you first realize it's kids even dancing, you're still expecting destruction.
Right. So
and then you realize how careful they're being.
Yes. So that's wonderful. Then the number starts in earnest, and it's a Christmas song, not any Christmas song that we recognize, but a really weird Christmas song that starts with "If I cannot bring you comfort." I'm like, what? Is this a dirge, an Irish dirge for Christmas? But my question is it actually Christmas? Because in the middle of it, it cuts to the General Leland approaching through like that iconic sort of feet green fields, and I'm like, okay, so it's clearly not Christmas time.
No, you see at one point, I think at the end, that the elephant on the hill is, instead of blowing clouds, it's blowing snow.
Right, right. So it's always... So
it doesn't matter.
Right, it's always Christmassy. Yeah, yeah, they can have Christmas anytime.
And there's kind of a Santa's thing, and yeah.
Yeah. So that's that question answered. I didn't think it was Christmas, but I was like, do they just have Christmas? The other question is, how do you think the reindeer felt when they saw Santa on a biplane? Do you think they were like, oh, I guess we've been supplanted?
Yeah, I think the reindeer were happy.
I felt kind of bad for the reindeer.
Yeah.
And I thought, and it's funny because I thought, that is the weirdest fucking detail to have Santa Claus on a biplane. And towards the end, I was like, oh, I know what's going to happen.
Yeah, no, that we call that foreshadowing.
Yes, very, very nice, very nice. We're gonna have a scene with Robin Williams flying into the rescue on that biplane. Okay, I get it.
Yeah. And like I said, like the funeral scene for me is obviously like it also wears the whole thing kicked. Just we want to take Dad's car, and then they're in a bumper car. And they make sure to hit the car in front of them, and the car behind them hits them, and they just kind of smile. I'm like, this is so bent. It's amazing.
Yeah, I loved that little bit. And again, the soundtrack trips me up because that whole procession is set to like an Enya tune.
Yeah.
I'm going to be honest with you. I absolutely fucking hated the soundtrack to this movie. I hated it so much, Adam.
I
just couldn't stand it. I tried, but I couldn't.
No. That's completely fair. Like, I always want to like it more than I do.
Fair enough.
Like, I vaguely like the Toriyama song the first time it plays, where I'm just like, oh, this is overdone and schmaltzy on purpose.
Yeah, no, I was like, and I kind of appreciated the weirdness of having a Toriyama performance.
Yeah.
And how weirdly that song sort of clashed with what was being shown, because we were supposed to actually have like the workers like joyfully doing stuff, but that song sounds kind of happy worker, like it sounds ominous, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, this, and then when they do the remix,
I kind of like the remix because it's so '90s bad.
I know it really hits that mark. I mean, it's really Trevor Horn, like,
sure.
Like I liked early '80s Trevor Horn, like, you know, with stuff like the Buggles. But once he got Zang Tum Tum Records, and he got Frankie Goes to Hollywood, and all that slate of bands, the most cynical, tasteless junk that he could sell. I that's all I could hear. There's even a Frankie Goes to Hollywood remix at some point in this film, and I'm like, yeah. I hate this stuff.
Well, I love the Talking Heads song too. Like like a terrible Talking Heads song.
Yeah, that was pretty. I guess we'll get to that whole scene because that was really fascinating, and there's so much weird shit that happens at the point of the mirror song is what it's called on the soundtrack. Yeah.
And again, like, I just, this is part of why I love the film. Also, I mean, I have always loved Joan Cusack, and I feel like she is one of the most underrated comedians out there.
I think she's one of the best things about the film. I love her performance and her jokes a lot more than I like Robin Williams' performance in this movie.
That's kind of fair. Like, Rob Williams, and again, like, I think he's supposed to be playing this guy who isn't quite fully formed yet, right? That's the point.
Oh, yeah. That's,
but we
that's
don't exactly. really get the payoff ever, which is one of the problems with the film.
Yeah, that's, I think you're right. I think you're right about that. Yeah, he's a child in a man's body,
right?
At this point,
I think, like, LL Cool J's performance is stunning. Frankly,
that is so much fun. I'm a military man. I don't like my food to touch. I like my string beans quarantined. I'm a military man. The one weird thing about it is that he tends to repeat lines, and I obviously that's in the script.
Right.
But it's a little odd. But I just enjoyed seeing LL Cool J. I kind of wish he'd been
unfold out of a sofa.
It's one of the best things. Strong Arrested Development vibes with that weird, endless, when he turns around and he's like painted the same color as the wall, and Cusack's like, it's really hard to reproduce that shade of red. I'm like,
he's good. we'll get into one of my favorite lines later. But I will also say that Robin Wright, who again, you know, these days is getting more credit for stuff, has the single funniest moment in the entire film. And it's a toss-off. And it destroys me every time I watch this movie.
Is this something that we have seen in another film that we've watched recently? That's what I thought.
But you got to admit, like, just the timing of it, her delivery, it's just, you know, I hope it's dolphin safe. And she just does this dolphin laugh. And then, like, smirks and keeps walking in, like, this seamless moment.
Yeah.
That is just so beautifully done.
And so out of nowhere, like, you just do not expect it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it gets the biggest laugh of the entire film out of me every time I watch this movie.
Oh my God.
Cannot help it.
Yep. No, I get that. And I thought how weird it was that we've actually now covered two films in which the ingenue figure does a dolphin impersonation.
Yeah.
That's not something I thought I would ever.
Both around the same era.
Both around the same era, exactly. Yeah, early 90s.
I got nothing. Maybe people were really playing Echo the Dolphin. I can't tell you. I don't know. Fuck that game. But anyway.
Yeah, not a good game.
But let's see. So all the performances, honestly, even Williams, even though he was playing kind of like a weird character for it, like the performances, you know, Gabon was just, oh God, he was so much fun to watch in this. Everyone is just giving it everything for this film.
Yeah, and I think I thought he did like a really good performance. It never quite worked for me, and I think it's more to do with the filmmaking itself than Gambon's performance. But that's fine. But you know that bit where he's explaining why he has an English accent. It's just, and they're like, "What? I'm playing an American. Why do I have an English accent?" And they're like, "I will write something for you."
Yeah.
And it's just kind of hilarious. Or the fact that his dad, who can barely talk, is just like gesturing at like his four stars. He's like, "Yes, Dad, I know you, Daddy. You have four stars. You always lord that over." And I'm like, "Okay, these are just still. They're all kids." Everyone in this movie is a child.
Yeah.
Like they're all, they themselves are all toys.
Right.
I think is probably the best way to like put it. They're toys in a land of toys. So.
Yeah. And for the, you know, again, like once we get into the plot with, and I just love the whole factory is kind of built like Lego so that you can just move rooms around.
Oh, yes.
Like all the walls, like the surrealism of it is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that the larger point is kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not as clear-cut as most movies would make it.
Right. And I think a lot of reviews at the time, one of their biggest criticisms was that they said this, that they, that they couldn't make out the point, that the movie was muddled, which is weird because I didn't strike me as being a muddled. I thought, if anything, I thought that Levinson and Kirk pretty much knew exactly what they were up to. So, anyway.
Yeah, and again, like just to speak to that larger point, I really do love that this film is saying and goes out of its way to be like, you know, like, A, they're, you know, war toys, you get war toys, and this is terrible, but also sometimes even the non, you know, the non-war toy and all this, you still need to stand up. Right. Like, sometimes it comes for all of us regardless, and that's sad, but necessary. And I love that they address the gray area.
Mm-hmm.
So that's me. That's part of why I really do like this film.
Yeah, no, I get that. I get that. Absolutely.
And it is deeply flawed. Like, I happily admit that. Like, again, it rushes to its ending.
Yeah. Yeah, that... I was... Here's the thing. Like I watched the first half of it yesterday, and then watched the second half this morning. And the difference between the first and second halves of this movie is pretty stark.
Yes.
Like once they actually launch into the last action-packed act of this, I hate to say it, but the filmmaking at that point is a sheerly incompetent. It's just a bunch of close-ups and like step printing rapid frame stuff, and none of it holds together. It's just Barry Levinson is not an action director, and I feel like they should have maybe figured out how to do that, and it would have been a lot better. But there are some moments and bits and all that I really did enjoy. Like really nice sort of like grace touches, I guess. Like the little toy like running away with a dog, one with like a dog like clamped onto its underwear.
Yeah,
like that. Like the weird sort of bits of anthropomorphization of toys were really fascinating. So that was cool. And as always, like the visual language and the design is still great. Right. In the film, even in parts where that just things just don't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah.
So I'm like, and I feel like it could have been, if Levinson had been able to master that part of the film, I think it would have acquitted itself a little better overall.
Yeah, they tried to make a meal out of that scene, and it doesn't work. Like, especially when, like, the bad guy cars start dancing, and then you're like, wait, who am I rooting for here? You know what I mean? Like, it is very muddled in terms of both intent and execution.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a shame.
It is a shame. It is a shame. Yeah, I almost feel like some parts, at some points, this film should just be looked at on a scene-by-scene basis. Because some of the scenes are brilliant, and some of them are terrible. And it's a shame that we couldn't get, like, even if all the scenes had been sort of mediocre, probably this film would be better regarded today. And as it is, I think people were just off put by the stuff that didn't work, and not sufficiently jazzed by the stuff that does work.
And I think that, again, the some of the stuff that does work, even that people were not expecting something quite this surreal.
No.
I think it harmed the film a little bit, like sadly, for wide consumption, just because it was so left field for the universe.
Yeah, I mean, let's. I'd like to talk about a scene that I think works extremely well, and then maybe we can cut to a scene that maybe doesn't work so well.
Sure.
And this is one of my favorite scenes in the whole movie. It's the toy vomit scene.
Yeah.
With probably one of the best lines in the movie, this is obviously the vomit of a white man.
Oh God. No, that entire scene just builds, like, just dialogue wise. Like, and that's the thing I think you're going to, right? Is that the scene works in terms of dialogue.
Uh-huh.
Like, it just is so much fun.
Right.
Right? Like, exactly. It's a little bit silly, and they're dealing with toys and, like, you know, toy vomit and all this. But they're also obviously, like, good at what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And they know it, and they're enjoying their job.
Yes. And there's a light bit of, like, satire.
Yeah.
About sort of when they're talking about, oh, well, this particular vomit that's, you know, that's like, you know, Asian vomit. There's like cilantro and duck sausage in that one, you know, going to this market and like, you know, what's this one? And I what was it? We added okra to this one. Now it's called the Bible Belch. Just
right.
Like really, really good little puns, but all the time sort of the walls are closing in like segment by segment. Not, and this is what I loved about this scene. They're not sort of just slowly moving in a uniform sense, like the, you know, the Death Star trash compactor. Yeah, it's Tetris style coming in. It looks like a game. It looks like toy pieces. Like everything is toyified in this film, even right. The walls.
And even when someone's like, you know, like as the room gets smaller, it's like we're being attacked by a crossword puzzle. It's such a great but again, they also never think to stop and figure out what's going on.
Yeah, they just keep on talking and then move up on the table and just keep on working. Yes. And they even get like a, you know, then LL Cool J pops in. He's like, oh, sorry about this.
And I love his great wrong read of sorry to scare you, because he sees the fake vomit, but he doesn't get that it's fake.
Right.
Yes. He's like, sorry to scare you. Like, you know, like, what's wrong with your diet? Like, it's just, it has that perfect little catch.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, so that, I mean, that sort of thing is great. And actually, one of the things I love is the little bits where they're just the characters, like the designers are in a room just kind of brainstorming product.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a really good sort of, you know, excavation of the creative process, especially like in a group where you're sort of figuring stuff out together. That
right.
Like all that stuff is wonderful. So, and I, like I say, more like this, Barry and Valerie. Then let's talk about a scene that I think doesn't work.
I'm curious to see what scene you pick.
I'm picking a scene that doesn't work on multiple levels, and it's the sex scene.
That's what I was thinking you were gonna say.
Felt like that was a film, like I felt like that was a scene from an entirely different film. In which, you know, Zevo, sorry, I just can't remember all the characters' names, and I don't know why. Robin Williams comes over, drop weapons to this. So Leslie comes over to Gwen's place after he's narrowly escaped from the sea swine. Also I'm like, what the fuck is this thing? So narrowly escaped from the sea swine, and says, you know, he's like soaking wet and shaken. And he says, I don't want to be pushy, but can I spend the night? And she just, like, goes from, like, being this, like, sweet as pie, always, like, giggly Southern Belle, to, like, just full-on Red Shoe Diaries, just tosses off her shirt, goes towards the bed, removes her bra. Meanwhile, two of the security guards, one of whom played by Jamie Foxx, are watching and leering with this little surveillance bot with a little trench coat and hat.
Right.
And I'm like, how are you not noticing this? Obviously, shut up, Aiden. It's not important. The bra, like she tosses the bra, falls over the bot. And then there's some bit of weird low comedy set to like Robin Wright and Robin Williams, two Robins, to their moans and squeaks, where the thing gets, robot gets tossed out onto the street, launched by the bra,
right,
and then gets run over by a truck while the security people are like, what's that? I'm like, what was that about? Why?
Yeah,
what
it is
this for?
Honestly, my least favorite scene in the entire movie. And it really only exists to set up the fact that they're spying on everyone with that truck.
Yeah.
Now, do I love the idea of the toy, like, key winder giving off little, like, sonar noises?
Yes. Yes, that is obviously, like, brilliant.
The rest of it can go to hell. Like, the idea that the bad guys are also using toys to spot, why?
Yeah, everybody's using the toys.
Right, like, it doesn't make sense. Like, it's an affectation, like, three steps too far for the film.
Right.
And the idea that, like, you know, that they're so lost in each other, they don't hear the window breaking even. The scene does not work. And yep. It's kind of embarrassing to watch in a weird way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it is. It is. It is very, very, very bad.
Just because you end up embarrassed for everyone involved.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, it feels very early 90s. You know, it feels almost like, I don't know. It's like, it feels like some producer was like, no, we got to make it sexy.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, do we though? Do we?
Yeah.
Gotta sell tickets. Gotta put the dads in the seats with Robin Wright. She's hot. Let's have her be all hot. You know,
it doesn't work.
I know. I feel like I'm sort of, I don't want to belabor.
No, you're fine. Because again, like the part of it is that it also just, like I said, it doesn't work, but it goes on. Like that's the other thing. Was yeah. Because of the whole, like, what's the robot? Oh, is he going to trip? Oh, is this going to... It just goes on about three times longer than it needs to in the first place?
That it does.
Being probably the worst, most uncomfortable scene in the movie doesn't help?
Yeah.
So you're just like, yeah. I'm trapped here. I need a parent. Like, it's just...
It is... I mean, I get that. Also that we... Part of Leslie's like maturity is embracing relationships and the love of a good woman, but they could probably, you know, not have done it that way.
Yeah, there was no need for it. But it happened.
It did.
And again, like I would think, like there's so many, like if you take it scene by scene, even at the point where the film doesn't really gel well. There are so many moments and just so many great scenes. You know, that first dinner scene where it's just like they're all the little teeny pranks, you know, the dribbling glass and all this, and just it's that tonal thing, right?
Yes, exactly.
You know, the fact that like Alsatia's like office is almost like a dollhouse room in another room, but then also so is her bedroom.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's a beautiful touch.
Yeah. No, I love that part too. That was wonderful.
Yeah. The John Cusack of it all for me is, I mean, over the course of his career, you saw a lot of people acting in films and TV with Robin Williams.
Right.
And often they were playing the straight person.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're acting against Robin Williams. Even if you're in a comedy, most of the people in another scene were, you know, because what choice did you have?
Yes.
And not that there weren't people who could keep up, because there definitely were, but God, Joan Cusack was one of them.
Uh-huh. Well, Joan Cusack.
Just even the great, like, you know, the whole VR goggle thing. And the, this felt a little weird, though. Oh, that goes in your ear. Yeah.
Because it's funny, because I spent the whole scene watching her with the little thing in her nose, and I'm like, is there some kind of smell-o-vision with these VR goggles? Right.
And then they swerve. When it works, it works.
Yeah. And I think a lot of this, apparently unsurprisingly, Williams did a lot of ad-libbing.
Yeah.
And it's clear that Levinson just was like, yeah, let's keep this in. And I think sometimes it really worked. Sometimes it was odd because the it was so like the world of toys is sort of at a remove from our world, but Williams's ad-libs were often really sort of like they had like Michael Jackson and Gandhi sort of jokes, and I'm like, is this our world? Is this toys world? It was that was a little jarring. I kind of wish they had like reined him in on some of that sort of style of improv.
I feel you.
Other than that, I mean, as always, I think.
No, I completely get it. Like, I, yeah. It makes sense to me. yeah. You know, his whole, of course, big, like, war speech to the toys was just, they were setting up the shot and he just went off.
Yeah.
Levin apparently had a habit of keeping cameras on because of this.
Right, right. There are some bits. There are some bits that I quite enjoyed with that speech. The Gandhi bit was like, no, that's not good.
The Gandhi bit didn't work, but for the you who are about to go fourth or fifth, depending on the order,
yeah,
that lands really well.
Yeah, the all kinds of little. There's the Saint Crispin's Day speech from Henry V, fourth, like all kinds of little bits and pieces that are just basically floating around Robin Williams' brain, and he just joins them all together, and it's, I mean, that is kind of a joy to see. And I like that. That's it. That's that whole scene with the toys sort of being wound up and facing off against the evil tanks.
Yeah,
you know, that probably shouldn't have worked, but I really kind of liked it.
Well, I said that the actual action scene doesn't work,
right?
But the setup for it,
yeah,
does,
yeah.
You know, right up until it becomes that badly shot scene. Right?
Right.
Like, right up until that exact moment, it works fantastically.
Mm-hmm.
It's once the actual action starts and they start doing the slowdowns and that crap just doesn't work.
Oh, yeah.
But again, also, up until then.
Also, one other thing I was sort of curious about. I actually was curious about what you thought. That entire scene in which our heroes are sort of running around the restricted area, and the general is sending sort of homicidal toys after them.
Right, the whole video game screen thing, yeah.
Right. I found that, like, I it wasn't always successful, but I found it interesting because you see that he's just as much... Like, he's just as much like his brother, right? He too is playing a game. He too has his toys. These toys happen to be toys of death.
Yeah.
But he's just completely childlike when the cannon pops out of the baby crib and starts shooting at them. He's like, oh, this is fun. That's kind of the secret to Gambon's character in that whole thing.
And that's what I'm saying, right? Like that's again, it all loops back to that ballet, I think, and the overall point of the movie with the gray area of, you know, like holding your line, and like the military isn't bad by default as far as the movie is concerned. It's back and forth and back and forth, and it admits a lot of the gray area.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. What else am I thinking of?
Let's talk about the music video.
Okay, yes, that's exactly what I wanted to talk about. The Mirror Song.
Yeah.
So somebody on the internet said that this is an MTV video shot by somebody who has never watched an MTV video in their life, which I found funny, but I'm not sure that's quite accurate. But
I'm like, that, you know, that's a comment said by somebody who wasn't alive in the 80s.
Exactly.
Because there are plenty of, like, I'm like, oh no, that's a music video, let me tell you.
No. You watch Once in a Lifetime and then come back and tell me.
And that's the thing, right? Like, it's a Talking Heads song, and they did it in that kind of style.
But I do have some questions about the internal logic of that scene. For example...
The internal logic of that scene.
For example, how is it that the two guards who are to be fooled by the music video, say, for example, they recognize Owen Owens right away, but they cannot tell that Yolanda and Steve, who are actually the Zevon children.
The Zevo kids?
Zevon. Warren Zevon. That's why I'm having trouble, because I keep on thinking like Warren Zevon.
Right. Can we go one step further?
Sure.
How is it that these guards who work there every day and stare at these monitors every day, and suddenly in the middle of their shift, one of the monitors is MTV? But it's not that it's showing MTV. It's that there's a fucking sign saying MTV. that has never been there before.
I know. It's like, how is that? They even like broached this problem in the script. How are we getting MTV? Because, you know, it comes with the cable. Like, what do you mean? It's just like, I kind of enjoy just how hilariously inept the guards are in this show. I mean, it's a sort of similar with Jamie Foxx's guard, seemingly unable to understand what's going on once a truck runs over their surveillance spot. How are you not noticing? What is going on? Why?
Yeah, no, it is completely nonsensical.
Yeah.
On every level.
On every level, right down to the, why are we actually seeing this video? And here's the thing. They put up the mirror. They do the video to distract the guards.
Right.
But then Robin Williams sort of steps out of the video behind the mirror and opens a door with his stolen security pass. Uh-huh. I'm like, you did not have to do any of that. All you had to do was put up a mirror and the guards would not notice.
Right. All they had to do was use the tables and all the structures that the toys were sitting on that were obviously bulletproof given the toy bullets, and just smash all the cars. But they're going to use toys to do it. They're going to do it in the silliest way possible. Yes. How do you not get this yet? You know, it is that thing of like, there's, it's Baron Munchausen, right? It's that point. At some point, you just have to sit there and go like, this is just the movie's own internal logic, even when it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. It's like Dick Grayson like doing like a triple somersault or something before punching a guy in the face. Yeah, completely unnecessary. All about style. All about the logic. Its own absurd logic.
Yeah, like, and that is the thing of it. Is that the music video doesn't make any sense. It is completely unnecessary from both a plot standpoint and a watching the movie standpoint. Honestly. It like aggressively breaks any sense the movie has left.
Uh-huh.
And also, it is funny enough that it works.
Sure.
Oh, like, they're like, what make fun of a heist movie? Like, you know, you can see, because again, this and Sneakers came out the same year.
Oh my god.
And there's a part of me that's like, you can see the Sneakers version of this working.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Carl out there thinking, being like, okay, so what we need to do is make a movie, music video. And just getting more and more ridiculous as it goes. But also, again, like, it just works because shut up.
You know, I really think that Brad Bird should have, like, done a little more with this similar setup in Mission Impossible 4 during the Kremlin break-in.
Agreed.
He should have had Simon Pegg and Tom Cruise do an entire music video for the guards.
You say this as if it wouldn't actually have been amazing. You would have watched the fuck out of that.
Oh, shit, yes, yes. Simon Pegg playing guitar while Tom Cruise just runs in circles? Yep. Yeah, absolutely. But I guess the funniest thing about that whole scene, though, for me, is one guard going, oh, this is kind of terrific. I'm like, no, it isn't. And then he's like, they're like, hey, you want to dance? Kinda. I want to dance with her. I'm like,
right.
What?
Like, I like the capper to the scene, though.
Jesus.
In that, like, all of the new guards hired by you know, the general, you know, the new Zeebo.
Yeah.
Leland's terrible.
Oh yeah,
because
they're
cut back to them, and they're watching the video. Like, all the guards, for some reason, are really into it.
Yeah,
and that just makes it so much funnier.
I know. Yeah, the bad guys are like essentially inept and hilarious.
But do you also like
fun.
That they try to give you a little bit of foreshadowing toward the music video? Did you appreciate that?
What
the bathroom scene? Oh, me and Leslie come in here, you know, like usually like every night we sing a little bit.
Oh, right. Huh.
Yeah, they actually fucking foreshadow the music video for no reason.
Wow. I mean, it doesn't need foreshadowing.
And it's weak as shit foreshadowing. I mean, the bathroom scene is funny by itself.
Yeah. Yeah, I forgot about the bathroom scene. Because, yeah, it just seemed, it feels like just an outlier, but it's funny nonetheless.
Yeah, I love the bathroom scene just for the, like, you tried. Everyone sounds good here. Oh no, don't do that again.
Yeah. Oh, no.
maybe it's a duet, then your voice wouldn't sound so bad.
That was actually that was legitimately really funny, and that's one of the scenes I actually remembered as I was watching this. I'm like, oh yeah, I remember this bit.
Yeah, Alsatia is just such a fun character.
I know.
Right down to, should we discuss the reveal?
Yes. Spoilers, because, people.
Yeah, I do actually think the reveal is weirdly critical. Because you find out that she is a robot, android thing, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's fascinating because, like the sea creature, it shows this weird level of, look what they could actually build but refuse to.
Right. Okay.
But it also makes sense out of the, how is this one guy, how is Leslie building this whole VR set?
Right.
Because everything else we see is just wind-up shit. And that's fine, but it isn't until you get the Alsatia thing that you go, oh, well, now this makes sense. That, this would explain why this company has so much money, is that, like, their actual stuff is not just this.
Right.
I just appreciate it.
I get that.
But yeah.
Yeah, that is... Oh, that's a thing. What else? There's lots of fun little bits in this film. And,
yeah.
I could sit here all afternoon and pick out little things that
right.
I enjoyed. Things that even the stuff that doesn't work, that's still stuff like Robin Williams is like sound jacket.
Which, oh God.
Which I think
could have actual designer who built that, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I can't remember the name of the designer, but yes, he built it.
Also, why? but okay,
I love that. Then there's the smoking jacket, which is fine. It's fine. But yeah, that's a good sense of whimsy. Lots of whimsy in this film.
Yeah.
So,
and I appreciate that. Like I said, I think that there's a lot of this movie that doesn't work, if we're honest about it.
Mm-hmm.
But more of it does than doesn't. And that overall, I love it because overall it is just so powerfully, let's do this thing.
That you're not wrong. It is very definitely, let's do this thing.
Yeah. I just, on levels that nothing else touched. Right? And you get to see Joan Cusack just flex. You get to see Robin Williams have some fun. Robin Wright gets to possibly do more than she did in Princess Bride, which is very sad. Mm. You know I'm right.
Sadly, yes. Yes. You're not wrong.
The duplication room scene, by the way, we have to.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Like, first of all, El Cujo's whole speech is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you get the result, it's just, again, like that's the thing of, like, this whole movie is quietly bent in ways you don't realize until you realize.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I love it for that.
That was awesome.
Like, it just works.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
So that's toys.
Pretty much. That is toys.
An ambitious and flawed but incredibly fascinating movie.
Yeah. And you know, I love that sort of thing.
Yeah. Generally I do too.
Right.
Not
doesn't
this
mean
time
that you have
me.
One mall, you know.
But exactly. Well, that's okay. Anywho.
That pretty much sums it up, I think. Next week. Oh boy, next week. We will be back with a fascinating movie.
Mm-hmm.
1998. So we're still living in the 90s here. John Frankenheimer's Ronin, which I really do feel like is one of those, like, if you've seen the movie at all, you know the movie, and if you haven't, you're just like, you've probably heard of it.
Yep. Ronin rhymes with bonin. Coincidence? Absolutely.
Sure.
That's a tagline they did not use because they would not respond to my many letters.
I cannot imagine why.
And it's Ronan. That'll be fun. I'm looking forward to watching that movie again.
It's been a long time since I've seen it.
Exactly.
So yeah, we'll do that. We'll be back next week, and until then, we should give some music. Woo!
Suspiria. Oh, fame.